This is a teaching called Vibrant. It's part of our Wildflower Revolution series. Here we go. Day after day, a grown man is carried and placed outside the temple gates. He has limited mobility in his legs, and so he begs for food and spare coins. Then everything changes. His legs are strengthened and he praises God in the temple. He learned to dance. He's healed? Day after day, a woman is exploited by a group of men. She's a fortune teller controlled by a python spirit. She makes these men a lot of money. Then everything changes. The python spirit, suffocating the image of God within her, is cast out. She is now free to sing new songs. She's healed. Day after day, the sick are cut off from community life. They are placed outside the boundaries of the village. Then everything changes. The sick are carried in and lined up. Some are placed on cots. Peter's shadow crosses their path, and they are healed. Across the Mediterranean, the same scene. More sick people cut off from community life. They bring to Paul handkerchiefs, aprons, and the belts of the sick. He touches these items to his skin, and they are brought back to the infirm. They are healed. For most of us, these are strange stories. If we are really honest, our prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain that helps us think, is screaming a number of things. Maybe we're screaming things like, these things are peculiar and hard to understand. Maybe we're saying, these are bizarre and unbelievable. And maybe we're saying to ourselves, these stories are fascinating and a little freaky. As we flex our brains, a question arises within us that moves us beyond skepticism to serious thinking. What is going on here? Jesus and the earliest Christians understood healing through the eyes of their Middle Eastern culture. Most of us have grown up in the West, and we've learned a very different way of thinking about illness, disease, medicine, health, and healing than our Eastern faith ancestors. Understanding and insight happen when we compare our worldview to theirs. Not all the following stereotypes hold true at all the time, but for the most part, these characteristics help us to identify the differences between East and West. One set of cultural values is not better than the other. The West has a lot to learn from the East, and vice versa. What follows are generalities that bring insight to the healing stories in the Bible. Being versus doing. For people of the ancient Mediterranean world, life is centered on who you are, not what you do. Priority is placed on the following questions. What tribe are you a part of? Who are your mother and father? What land do you come from? For people of the Western world, life pivots on what you do, not who you are. It is your measurable accomplishments that define you. Communal versus individual. In the Middle Eastern mindset, communal ties are stressed. Communal ties are stressed and a person finds their identity within the group. People of the West tend to stress individual accomplishment and generally find their identity outside of the group. People of the East identify with Gandhi, who after finishing his studies in England, returned to India in order to serve the people of his hometown village. People of the West identify themselves with John Wayne, who represents rugged individualism or the never-ending pursuit of land, adventure, and progress. Marveling at nature versus mastering nature. Eastern Mediterranean culture tends to marvel at nature. The Gospel of Matthew records the wise men who came from the east asking, "Where is the child who has been born the King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising." Western cultures attempt to master nature. We have learned to harness,
restrain, control nature in order to benefit humanity. Western cultures have given us antibiotics, pacemakers, and relief from chronic pain, artificial limbs, and dialysis. Humans are good and bad versus humans are good. Eastern cultures view humanity as good and bad. They are able to hold both views together at the same time. Think about King David. He is called a man after God's own heart in 1 Samuel 13:14, and yet he commits adultery, murders Uriah by sending him to the front lines of the battle, and then lies about it, 2 Samuel 11 and 12. Western cultures tend to believe in the ever-expanding possibility and potential of human beings. Healthcare attempts to prolong life as long as possible. One helpful example of Western culture's fascination with the growth of humankind comes from Star Trek. Spock, or Mr. Spock in the Star Trek series, is part human and part Vulcan. He is logical and able to squelch his emotions. He's a model of the ongoing perfection of humanity. Later in Star Trek The Next Generation, Spock's character is replaced by an ever more perfect robot human, Data. Present versus future. Eastern Mediterranean culture are primarily agricultural people who are connected with life today. They are invested in the present realities of the flocks, herds, crops, and daily nourishment. Western culture is primarily concerned with the ever-expanding realities and hopes of tomorrow. Westerners consider it wise to invest into the future. So there we have it. Being versus doing. Communal versus individual. Marvelers of nature versus masters of nature. Humans are good and bad, and humans are good. Present versus future. These defining characteristics of East and West influence how each culture understands health and healing. So then for the ancient East, health is restoration to being. And for the West, health is restoration to function. In other words, health is becoming who you are, Eastern Mediterranean. Or health is getting back to what you do, Western. One afternoon a few years ago, Stacy started complaining that her neck felt stiff. Then she had a low-grade fever, and by bedtime her stomach felt queasy. In the middle of the night, she started screaming. Her fingertips furiously squeezed her head, hoping to ease the pain. We took her to the hospital, not understanding what was happening. It was there that we learned she had meningitis. Meningitis is an infection in your brain that literally squeezes your membranes. The doctor expressed to us how serious this could be, and we were suddenly facing a possible life or death situation. She was tested, examined, and given fluids through an IV. Finally, they determined that she had viral meningitis and treated with antibiotics, and the pain began to subside. In the days, weeks, and months to come, as she shared her story with friends, they started asking questions. Interestingly, their questions were not about the dysfunction of meningitis. They trusted the doctor's analysis. They were probing for something deeper. They started asking us about our lifestyle. That's when I got uncomfortable. I kept trying to bring the conversation back to the Western viewpoint. The virus was found and treated, and now Stacy is healthy. My friends began to lovingly point out my work hours, the stress of the position that I was in, and the responsibilities of two young children. They pointed out the strain this put on Stacy's. My friends were doing an Eastern thing, a Jesus thing. As a family, we couldn't keep living the way we were. I began to see my role in my wife's sickness. Ouch. I shared with the leadership at my church that I needed to find ways to work less. To my surprise, they were all on board, and we worked together to form goals and set up a system of accountability. On the one hand, I am grateful that Western medicine saved my wife's life. And I'm also deeply grateful for the Eastern perspective that helped restore my family to wholeness. In one word, from an Eastern point of view, diseases disvalue. In one word, from a Western point of view, diseases dysfunction. Disvalue has to do with brokenness. Dysfunction has to do with infection. Broken pottery versus prescription pills. Healthcare, according to a Western model, is twofold. A healthcare professional is trained to assess the symptoms. Then they prescribe or hand out antibiotics. Healthcare, according to an Eastern model, is also twofold. The healer acknowledges the brokenness. Then they offer empowerment or a hand up towards restored community life. When someone from the Western world hears a miracle or healing story, they think about how the biomedical problem was identified and treated. When someone with Eastern background hears a miracle healing story, they think about how the individual was restored to community life. When we begin to understand these differences, we can better appreciate the layers of meaning within these ancient healing stories. Day after day, a grown man is carried and placed outside the temple gate. He has limited mobility in his legs, and so he begs for food and coins. Then everything changes. Peter and John see this man. They don't just notice him, they look intently at him. They were not looking for symptoms, they were looking into this man's soul. They were acknowledging him as a person. They were valuing his identity. They were doing their Eastern Mediterranean thing. They don't hand out antibiotics, but they give him a hand up. The man feels his legs being strengthened. The name of the one who heals is Jesus, the Messiah, from the town of Nazareth. Jesus heals this man. Through Peter and John, God acknowledges this man's brokenness and empowers him with a hand up. As this man gets used to his legs, he jumps, he leaps, and he stumbles. And then Peter and John don't leave him outside the temple. They take him inside. This man is now reunited with the God of his ancestors and worships inside the temple. He's now restored. He's healed. His legs are strengthened and he dances praising God in the temple.
Day after day, a woman is exploited by a dishonest group of men. She's a fortune teller controlled by a python spirit. She makes these men a lot of money. Then everything changes. The woman sees Paul and his companions and shrieks, "These men are servants of the Most High God who proclaimed you a way of salvation." 16:17. She didn't speak once or twice. Can you imagine her shrill voice for 2 or 3 days? "These men are servants of the Most High God who proclaimed you a way of salvation." She finally exasperates Paul. He's annoyed with her. But God's not. God sees her. God does not ask for symptoms. God acknowledges her brokenness. Paul casts out the python spirit, and God begins the healing process. The python spirit, suffocating the image of God within her, is cast out. She is now free and learns to sing new songs. Day after day, the sick remain cut off from community life. They are placed outside the boundaries of the village. Then everything changes. The sick are carried in and lined up. Peter's shadow crosses over the sick, and they are healed. In the ancient world, a shadow was considered a person's life force or an alter ego. Peter, as God's representative, acknowledges the broken condition of the people and empowers them to become whole. God's healing welcomes them back into community life. Paul, the holy man, touches the handkerchiefs, aprons, and belts to his skin. His power source is King Jesus. The sick are healed. Through Paul, God sees the brokenness of the needy and acts to remedy it. God sees their pain and offers healing. They can now return to their fields and families. They are restored. We come back to the cognitive reasoning part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex. What do we learn from these stories? Human brokenness is a reality of life. Just like the people in these stories, we all suffer from some type of brokenness. Some of us, like the man in chapter 3 who was physically disabled, faced the ongoing physical brokenness of our bodies. This man also faced institutional brokenness. His disabled legs, because of the temple laws, as well as the social mores of ancient society, disqualified him from going inside the temple. He was banned from entering the very place that revealed God's glory to the world. We may be like the woman from chapter 16 who faced social brokenness. Her gender, race, and class allowed for a group of men to take advantage and profit from her. There are many other forms of brokenness that we experience. There's relational brokenness. Maybe we've been betrayed, treated smugly, or even encountered jealousy from friends and family. There's economic brokenness. We may stare at our bank accounts and know all too well the realities of unemployment or unforeseen circumstances that have depleted our resources. Perhaps we carry long-standing family baggage or have made poor choices that have estranged us from others. That's personal brokenness. There's also political brokenness. Those who have wielded power over us, taking advantage of their positions and crushed our possibilities. Some of us have been devastated by accidental brokenness. The random acts of violence against innocent people. The drunk driver who kills the girl crossing the street. The stray bullet from the gang fight that kills a senior citizen. Or the careless act of a thief that leaves us feeling vulnerable and violated. Brokenness is everywhere. Brokenness is a web. All are affected. Social, relational, political, institutional, personal, physical, and accidental. Human brokenness is not only our reality, it is the reality that Jesus fully experienced. Jesus relates to brokenness because of his misunderstood life and bitter death. Jesus understands us on every level. He faced criticisms about his hometown, social. His closest followers abandoned him, relational. He called his people to remember the plight of the poor, and the elite devised a plot for his demise, economic. His call for reform upset the religious establishment, institutional. He communicated Israel's call to bless the world, and many were hostile and fearful of him, personal. His body was flogged, nailed, pierced, thirsting, and finally asphyxiated. Physical. He died because of the threat and reality that he was the king of the Jews. Political. Rome chose crucifixion as a method of punishment to extend the empire's borders. Accidental. His body was broken. His dreams for his people and for the world were shattered. Many times we find ourselves in shattered pieces like a broken clay pot. Where do we go to put the fragments of our lives together again? These stories teach us that God heals human brokenness. As Jesus' body was flogged, nailed, pierced, thirsting, and as he gasped for his last breath, God wept. Through Jesus, we are given penetrating insight into the brokenness of the world. The world can be a violent place that crushes, splits, and divides. But God, through Jesus, through the healing stories and the acts of the apostles, teaches us more. God is the God of new creation. What once was crushed, split, and divided, God mends, joins, and unites. What once was broken can now be made whole. What once was the bloody leftover fragments of crucifixion, God transforms into the hope of resurrection. What once was a place of gruesome death, God transforms into the starting point for a life that is beautiful. God breathed new life into Jesus, and God breathes new life into us day after day. The healing of Jesus' broken body was just the beginning, the first fruits of our world being made new. Many of us live with brokenness that's too deep for words. We don't know why some are healed physically and why some are not. We sit uncomfortably with these aches. When you sit with someone who suffers, or when you yourself suffer, you long for an end to this pain. Decisive healing. These healing stories offer hope. They are snapshots of the world to come. What God did in Jesus is what God is going to do for you and the world. Your future in God is vibrant. Day after day, as you wait and as you ache, God through Jesus acknowledges you. God values you. God sits with you through the pain. God looks intently at you and invites you to the journey of healing. God whispers to you the story of the cross and the hope of resurrection. And one day there will be no more pain. So as you wait and as you ache, God offers a hand up and invites you to partner with God in the work of mending, joining, uniting of the world's brokenness. You can become a wildflower and dance amidst debilitating despair, and sing against senseless systems, and play for possibilities and progress, and marvel at the mystery of a magnificent maker.
Solid to stand, quick to defend, my heart is mending. Again, solid to stand, quick to defend.